return to the people.
Morning, Bernard.
Morning, Prime Minister. You have to leave the TV studios in 5 minutes.
I'm ready.
Do you remember what the interview's about?
Local government. But the one thing I can do practically nothing about. These wretched councils are run by a bunch of corrupt morons who are too clever by half.
The most a moron can be is less clever by half. I mean, they are democratically elected, these councillors, aren't they?
Depends how you define democracy. Only about 25% of people ever vote in a local election. And those who do simply regard it as a popularity poll for the real political leaders in Westminster.
But councillors are still representatives, aren't they?
Well, who do they represent? I mean, nobody knows who the councillor is. Do you know who your councillor is?
No.
Well, no, of course you don't. The councillors know this, so they spend 4 totally unaccountable years on a publicly subsidised ego trip. They ruin the inner cities, they let the schools fall to bits, they demoralise the police and undermine law and order, and then they blame me.
Will you say all that?
I just said it, didn't you hear me?
No, I mean on television.
No, of course not. You make me sound intolerant. The leader of Hounsworth Council, this bloody Agnes Moorhouse woman, has threatened to withhold funds from the police and ban them from council property.
Well, she can't do that. Section 5 of the Police Act 1964. Councils have to provide an adequate and efficient police force. It's all in there.
Yeah, well, she says that until the police force is 50% black, it can't be adequate or efficient.
She can't prove that.
Unfortunately, her own police force is the most inadequate and least efficient in the country. And everybody's terrified that if we take her to court, she will prove it. Humphrey, we've got to do something about this Agnes Moorhouse woman. Her borough's practically a no-go area.
Oh, indeed, Prime Minister.
Well, what?
How about a strongly worded letter?
Well, get an even more strongly worded letter in reply, copy it to all the newspapers. Mm. Well, if you're asking for trouble.
Mm. Well, you could draw her attention to the law.
She is a lawyer, Bernard. Getting round the law is what she's paid for.
Well, why not just ignore her?
Have everyone say that I'd handed over control of the inner cities to the militant loonies? She's a wild woman, Humphrey. No, someone's got to have a word with her. Point out the security implications.
One of the law officers?
No. Mm. Can't be a political confrontation. It has to be an official. Somebody with responsibility for security.
Somebody with responsibility.
No. She's a monster. No, it's up to Scotland Yard, the Home Office, the security branch, their special branch, I mean, the MI5, the Lord Chancellor, Department of the Environment.
And the Whitefish Authority?
Whitefish Authority. No,
don't you coordinate all the security services?
Well, yes, of course.
Or should we give that responsibility to someone else?
No.
That's agreed, then. A quiet word. Come to a gentleman's agreement.
But she's not a gentleman. She's not even a lady.
I want you to handle her.
Come on, Dad.
Handle her?
Go in.
Agnes Moorhouse to see you, Sir Humphrey.
Oh, my dear lady, how very nice to meet you. Do come in. Now, won't you come and sit down? Now, right, would you get Miss Moorhouse a cup of tea? Or is it Mrs. Moorhouse?
Is my marital status really your concern?
No, it's just, I was just really worried about whether the, would you get, her a cup of tea? Now, what should I call you, Mrs. Moorhouse?
You can call me Agnes. What shall I call you?
You can call me Sir Humphrey. Oh, my dear lady.
I'm not your dear lady. Don't patronise me and cut out the sexist crap, OK?
Okay, Agnes. Now, the reason I wanted us to have this little meeting was because I wanted us to try and understand one another. Basically, I'm sure we're in agreement.
Really?
Yeah, well, obviously you have your own views about how Britain should be run, but I'm sure we agree on a fundamental basis of order and authority.
That's half true.
Half true.
You agree, I don't.
Well, it's obvious.
It's obvious if you've got it made under the present system, then you want to use authority to preserve your privileges. But what about the homeless? What about the unemployed? What about the poor people?
Oh, yes, I know all about them.
Really? What do you know?
Well, I've read all the published papers. I've seen all the statistics. I've read all the official reports. Believe me, dear lady, Agnes, dear, I do know all about them.
Fine. What does half a pound of margarine cost? What does half a pound of margarine cost?
Oh, how should I know? 20p.
20p?
Well, £2.40, I don't know.
Why should you? What time do Social Security offices open? How long can you run a one-bar fire with 50 pence in the meter?
I'm not entirely sure I follow.
Of course you don't. If you knew that sort of thing, you wouldn't agree about using authority to support the system.
Look, I do understand. I do sympathise. It'd be marvellous if there's no poverty, but we just don't have the resources to achieve that.
Who hasn't?
The nation.
Really? Does this desk belong to the nation? This china?
Porcelain.
These portraits? Or are they your own?
Of course not, the government property.
Oh, good. They should fetch about, what, 80,000? That should keep 20-odd one-parent families for a year. Then what about your salary?
That has nothing to do with it.
Good. Then we'll have that too. Leave you £100 a week. That's 70,000 a year for the needy.
Look, my salary is merely part of a complex economic structure.
Good. We'll simplify it. After all, you don't want to make a profit out of serving your country, do you?
Ah, tea.
Over here, I think. Ah, very nice. Thank you so much. Shall I be mother? tell me, Agnes, this policy of yours of only allowing free-range eggs to be sold in your borough, how does this help poverty?
Animals have rights too, you know. A battery chicken's life isn't worth living. Would you want to spend your life packed in with 600 other desperate, squawking, smelly creatures, unable to breathe fresh air, unable to move, unable to stretch, unable to think?
Certainly not. That's why I never stood for Parliament. Now, let's turn to this matter of the police. Now, you want to withhold funds from the police, ban them from council property, sack the chief constable, and allow several no-go areas.
That's it.
But can't you see that an adequate police enforcement is in all our interests? And it is especially in the interests of all those poor, ordinary folk who dwell in the high-crime housing estates.
I don't accept that.
Oh, you want them to be in danger of being mugged and raped and bombed by Molotov cocktails?
Well, that can't be helped.
But this could lead to the overthrow of our whole system of government, our whole way of life.
Yours, not theirs.
So, you would be happy to abolish Parliament?
Yes.
The courts?
Yes.
The monarchy?
Of course.
Well, perhaps you'd like to burn down my office while you're about it. The matches are over here.
No, certainly not.
Why?
I may need it.
You know that Agnes Morehouse woman?
Yes.
I told Humphrey to have a word with her.
That sounds like an interesting experiment.
He says it went quite well, but he didn't want to talk about it very much, and he had 4 whiskies in 10 minutes.
What is it about local government? Oh. I've just been having terrible trouble with the town hall. They've cancelled the old people's Christmas party.
Why?
Oh, something to do with new staff overtime agreements. It's your husband's fault, Mrs. Hacker. You tell him to give us the money and you can have the party.
Isn't it marvellous? Every piece of stupidity and incompetence in every town hall in Britain is blamed on me. Now, that'll be Dorothy. I asked her up here to have a word about that very thing. Dorothy, come in. Come and sit down. Now, tell me, what is wrong with local government?
Well, it's a them and us situation. The local authority ought to be us.
Us the people, or us, the government?
In a democracy, that ought to be the same thing.
Yes, we all know it, isn't it?
No, I mean us, the people. They ought to be running things for us. They ought to be part of us, but they're not. They're running things for them, for their power, for their convenience and their benefit.
Yes, I know that.
So what's the answer?
Fight them.
No, make them us.
How do you mean?
Well, suppose you want to stop a major government project. What do you do?
Join the civil service.
No, I mean if you're an ordinary person.
Oh, can't really remember what that was like.
Judging from the opinion polls, you're soon going to find out.
Just imagine you're an ordinary person, Jim.
Well, I'll try.
And imagine you want to stop a road widening scheme or a new airport being built near your house. Now, what do you do?
Write your local MP.
And that does the trick?
Well, no, of course not. But that's what ordinary people do. Ordinary people are stupid.
Is that why they elect?
Stop barracking, darling, please. That's a good girl. I'm trying to understand what Dorothy's driving at.
Ordinary people form a group to fight official plans they don't want. And this group represents the local people. Now, this group is different from the local authority because the local authority doesn't really represent the local people.
Why not?
Well, because councillors are all drawn from tiny little local political parties.
When a local community really cares about an issue, they form a committee. And then they go round the streets, they talk to people in the supermarkets and on the doorstep, they drum up support and raise money.
And this money isn't like the rates. It's spent on what people actually want it spent on.
I bet the ordinary people in this neighbourhood would like the old folks to have a Christmas party.
Well, of course, but the town hall would rather have a new town hall. Or a councillor's fact-finding mission to the Bahamas.
So, what do you do?
Darling, it's obvious. Abolish them. Invest all power in the central government.
That's exactly what Humphrey would say.
See?
Jim, you've completely missed the point of everything I've been saying. The idea is to return power to the ordinary people and take it away from the town hall machine. Make local government genuinely accountable.
Yes, but how?
Well, it's all in an article in this month's Political Review by Professor Marriott. Now, you create little voting districts, 200 or so households electing their own little parish council, a city village, and the chairman of this little parish council is their representative on the local authority.
But you'd have about 500 councillors to each borough.
Oh, well, that's right. So they'd elect an executive council. And then that would mean that the local authority had a parliament and a cabinet.
Parliament don't elect the cabinet. We don't want that. That'd be taking participation to extreme lengths.
Now, these councils would, with the result that every councillor would be in door-to-door contact with the people who voted for him.
Dorothy, this could be like the Great Reform Act of 1832. These councils are like little old rotten boroughs. You know, half a dozen people deciding who's going to be in the town hall for the next 4 years.
Well, precisely.
And I shall be the great reformer. Hacker's Reform Bill. I shall introduce it myself. The power of this country does not lie in offices and institutions. It lies in the stout hearts and strong wills of the yeomen of Britain.
Women have the vote too.
The yo women of Britain. Yo persons. Yo people. No, the people of this island race on their broad and wise shoulders.
And you can't have wise shoulders.
On their broad shoulders and wise hearts, no, heads. On their wise heads lies our destiny. We must give back power to the people. And I shall be the one to introduce this, what shall I call this new scheme?
Democracy?
Yes.
Sir Humphrey, you wanted to see me?
Oh, yes, but... Bernard, I want to have a word with you about Professor Marriott's article.
Yes, I think it's about time we reform local government.
Do you, Bernard?
Yes. At least I think I did. That is, I'm not wholly against it. Although there are many convincing, some might say conclusive, arguments against it.
Some might indeed, Bernard.
Yes. Why?
Because, Bernard, once you create genuinely democratic local communities, it won't stop there.
Won't it?
Well, of course it won't. You see, once they get established, they'll insist on more power. And the politicians will be too frightened to withhold them, so you'll get regional government.
Would that matter?
Bernard's going to sit down. Bernard, what happens at the moment if there is some vacant land in, say, Nottingham, and there are rival proposals for its use, you know, a hospital, a college, or an airport?
Well, we set up an interdepartmental committee. Department of Health, Department of Education, Department of Transport, Treasury, Environment. Ask for papers, hold meetings, propose, discuss, revise, report back, redraft, normal thing.
Precisely. Months of fruitful work. leading to a mature and responsible conclusion. But if you have regional government, they decide it all in Nottingham. Probably in a couple of meetings, complete amateurs.
It is their city.
And what happens to us?
Well, much less work.
Yes, much less work. So little that ministers might almost be able to do it on their own. So we'd have much less power.
Well, I don't know whether I really want power.
Bernard, if the right people don't have power, do you know what happens? The wrong people get it. Politicians, councillors, ordinary voters.
But aren't they supposed to in a democracy?
This is a British democracy,
Bernard. How do you mean?
British democracy recognises that you need a system to protect the important things of life and keep them out of the hands of the barbarians.
Things like the opera. Radio 3. The countryside. The law. The universities. Both of them.
We are that system. Gosh. We run a civilized, aristocratic government machine tempered by occasional general elections. Since 1832, we have been gradually excluding the voter from government. Now, we've got them to a point where they just vote once every 5 years for which bunch of buffoons will try to interfere with our policies, and you are happy to see all that thrown away.
Well, I didn't mean...
Bernard, do you want the Lake District turned into a gigantic caravan site? The Royal Opera House into a bingo hall? The National Theatre into a carpet sale warehouse?
Well, it looks like one, actually.
We gave the architect a knighthood so that nobody would ever say that. Do you want Radio 3 to broadcast pop music 24 hours a day? And how would you feel if they took all the culture programs off television?
I don't know, I never watched them.
Well, neither do I, but it's vital to know that they're there.
But you always said local government was corrupt and incompetent.
Well, so it is, Bernard. So corrupt and incompetent that even ministers recognize it. Which means that they centralize. They give all the responsible jobs to us. We are the flower of government, Bernard. Local government may be a dunghill, but it grows beautiful roses.
You mean...
Yes, that's right, Bernard. But if we try to clean up the dunghill and lose our balance,
we land in the...
Thank you. Yes,
very good of you.
Thank you. So you see why I'm so worried, Arnold. This Marriott scheme is the thin end of the wedge. It could eventually undermine the civil service, too.
I don't think there's any danger of that. Not if you play it right. Hackers just grasping at straws. It's the old logical fallacy. All cats have four legs. My dog has four legs.
Therefore, my dog is a cat.
He's suffering from politician's logic.
Something must be done. This is something, therefore we must do it.
But doing the wrong thing is worse than doing nothing.
Doing anything is worse than doing nothing.
Right. After all, what is the one thing that obsesses politicians day and night throughout their careers?
Well, obviously, publicity and popularity. Name in the paper, face on the telly. Anything which will help get themselves re-elected.
Quite. Government is fame and glory and importance and big offices and chauffeurs and being interviewed by Terry Wogan.
Whereas opposition is impotence and insignificance, and people at parties asking you if you know Robin Day. But, Arnold, reforming the civil service might win them popularity.
But it can't ever happen, can it, Humphrey?
Why not, Arnold?
It's the same as in local government. constituencies of 60,000 are far too big for people ever to know their MP, so electors have to make up their minds on the basis of the telly and the radio and the press.
Yes, they pick their favourite party leader and then they vote for whatever clown a few dozen people in their constituency party have chosen as their candidate. Believe me, I do understand how the system works, you know, Arnold.
But do you? Listen, Humphrey, if a politician lives or dies by his media image, then his survival depends on the civil service publicity machine helping him with his fatuous speeches and articles and photo opportunities. Politicians are dependent on us, 1,000 press officers to publicize their little triumphs, the Official Secrets Act to conceal their daily disasters.
So what you're saying, Arnold, is that under Professor Marriott's scheme, MPs would be elected on their own local reputation rather than on their leader's media image.
Yes. Governments and ministers would have to earn their votes in the House. Actually do what the electors want instead of leaving us to do it our way while they do the fame and glory bit.
It's a frightening thought.
Frightening to us. But what about the Prime Minister?
Of course, even more frightening. Reforming the civil service would remove his life support system.
It would kick away the ladder that's put him where he is.
While he's still standing on it.
That's right. The only real way to reform the civil service system is to reform the political system. And no government's going to reform the system that put it into power.
Well, the thing is to get the Prime Minister to see the danger.
That's your job.
I know. I'll tell him it'll be the most courageous thing he's ever done.
That always does the trick.
Yeah.
Agnes Morehouse, Sir Humphrey.
Agnes. Why don't you sit over here? Now, Agnes, the Prime Minister is really worried about your attitude to the police.
Oh, good.
So, he's proposing a wholesale reform of local government. Street representatives, voting communities of a couple of hundred households, total involvement of the whole borough electorate in the selection of candidates.
This isn't serious.
Oh, I'm afraid it is.
This strikes at the very heart of our democratic social reforms.
What, do you mean that people don't want your policies?
Well, of course they would if they could understand. The ordinary voters are simple people. They don't see their needs. They can't analyse problems. They need leadership to guide them the way they ought to go.
And don't you think the people would vote for such leadership?
Well, people don't always understand what's good for them.
Oh! I do so agree with you.
Do you?
Well, of course! That's how the civil service has survived the centuries. We made this country what it is, but nobody would ever vote for us.
We know what's right for this country.
So do we.
The only way is to have a small group in charge and just let the people have a mass vote every few years.
But if they actually got to know the people they were voting for...
If they actually got to talk to them, then they'd fall for all the silly conventional ideas. Humphrey.
Agnes.
This would be a disaster for you too, you know.
I know. Community councils always lead to regional government. Agnes, we must stop the Prime Minister.
You want to stop him too?
Well, of course, and you must help me.
How?
Well, I think I know how to do it. But I want your written assurance that you will stop harassing your local police. I mean, stop making them democratically accountable to you. It will remove some of the urgency.
Right. What do you want me to say?
Well, I thought it might go something like this.
Oh, Humphrey. You're a great loss to the militant revolution.
And you, my dear Agnes, are a great loss to the civil service.
Why does Humphrey want me to see this Professor Marriott?
He must have an ulterior motive.
Why?
All Humphrey's motives are ulterior.
Has he, Bernard? I mean, what does Humphrey really think about this plan?
Well, I think, that is, I'm sure, if it's what you want, then I'm sure Sir Humphrey would, he would...
As bad as that?
Mr. Professor Marriott is outside. Will you see him?
Yes, of course.
Bernard, I wonder if you'd be kind enough.
Humphrey, what's your view of the Marriott plan?
Well, it is a brilliant way of bringing real democracy into the government of Britain.
So you're in favour?
That's not what he said.
Prime Minister, if you genuinely want real democratic government, you will have my unquestioning support.
Professor Marriott.
Oh, Professor. Come in. Good of you to come. Do sit down.
Prime Minister, oh, it's an honour to meet you.
Yes, I know.
Prime Minister, Professor Marriott has a sequel to his original article, which is due to be published next month. It is even more exciting than the first one.
Tell me more, Professor.
Yes, tell the Prime Minister about the benefits to Parliament.
Well, as you know, under my local government scheme, each borough would have its 500 street representatives. Now, this means that the local MP would be able to talk to them all in one hall.
So they'd really get to know him.
Exactly, and tell all the people in their street about him. Personal, private, word-of-mouth recommendation.
That's terrific.
Hold on a moment. Where would the constituency party come in?
Ah, well, that's the marvellous thing. Party organisations would be completely bypassed. MPs would become genuinely independent.
What?
You see, if they were personally known to all their constituents or their committee representatives, then whether MPs would get re-elected would be nothing to do whether the party backed them or not. It would depend on whether the constituents felt they were doing a good job.
So if the MP wasn't dependent on his party machine, he could actually vote against his own government party and get away with it.
Exactly, because there'd be no need for official candidates. Election would depend on the reputation of each individual MP, not the image of the party leader. An end of the party machine, an end to the power of the whips.
But how would the government get its unpopular legislation through without being able to twist the odd arm? How would it command a majority?
It couldn't. There can only be legislation if a majority of the MPs were actually in favour of it. Parliament would become genuinely democratic.
Prime Minister, it is the most courageous policy you have ever proposed.
Professor, thank you so much. Absolutely fascinating. Goodbye.
Oh, but Prime Minister, it's a splendid idea. Real democracy.
Dorothy, it's out of the question.
But the Marriott scheme was our way of controlling the local authority. Well, now what are we going to do about Agnes Morehouse and the police?
Oh, Prime Minister, I've had another word with her. To put it simply, Prime Minister, certain informal discussions took place involving a full and frank exchange of views, out of which there arose a series of proposals, which on examination proved to indicate certain promising lines of inquiry, which, when pursued, led to the realization that the alternative courses of action might, in fact, in certain circumstances, be susceptible of discrete modification, leading to a reappraisal of the original areas of difference and pointing the way to encouraging possibilities of compromise and cooperation, which, if bilaterally implemented with appropriate give and take on both sides, might, if the climate were right, have a reasonable possibility at the end of the day of leading, rightly or wrongly, to a mutually satisfactory resolution.
What the hell are you talking about?
We did a deal. Oddly enough, she didn't seem to like the idea of democracy any more than you.
Or you.
Quite so, dear lady.
Well, I think we're all agreed that the nation isn't quite ready for total democracy. Perhaps next century?
Well, you could still be Prime Minister next century.
Well, the one after that.
Yes, Prime Minister.